Federal employees planning their retirements need to make a lot of decisions. The most important one you have to make, though, is one that Tammy Flanagan is writing about. She's Senior Benefits Director at the National Institute of Transition Planning and here to take a look at that most important retirement decision. Tammy, what is that most important decision and what are the problems that people have in making it? Thanks for being on the program today.
Yeah, hi, Francis. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I think the most important decision, it might be surprising coming from me because I'm always talking about choosing the best date to retire.
Yes.
But really, it's whenever you're filling out the application for either your CSRS or your FERS retirement benefit is choosing what kind of retirement do you want. And just seems like I've had a rush of emails from people who are planning their retirements for this year who are really struggling with whether or not to elect a survivor benefit or not a survivor benefit or, you know, just kind of questioning the value of that election. So I think it's a big decision people have to make.
You've got a lot of numbers in the column that you have coming out, and we'll put a link to it when it's ready at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth along with our conversation. When I look at all those numbers, the first question is this a math problem where you just have to figure out the best dollar return for you, or are there other elements that go into this decision besides just raw numbers?
Yeah, I think the biggest question comes from couples. You know, we're typically here speaking about a married couple because a single person, it's a lot easier because there you just elect your retirement and it dies with you. But when you're part of a married couple, whether your spouse works or whether they don't work, you have to decide whether or not to leave them a survivor benefit. And it's almost like you're buying life insurance. In fact, so much so that some people actually go out and shop for life insurance to use that as a substitute for the survivor benefit. And that's where it starts to get a sticky and complicated question, because then you're comparing premiums for life insurance to the cost or reduction to your retirement. And it's similar, but it's very different.
So as I read your column, I thought the numbers are great, and I understand the way you presented them. You present them very clearly. But if I'm one of these folks who is not a numbers person and I see them and I seize up, what are the concepts that I should be thinking through if I'm not prone to sitting down and with a calculator or a spreadsheet and hammering through all these numbers?
Well, actually, I'm the believer of that the government survivor benefit is going to be your best bet all the way around, because then you don't have to know the numbers. You don't have to worry about outliving it. You don't have to worry about inflation eroding it. It's just there. It's a benefit payable. If you die first, your spouse gets it. But where people get into trouble is when they talk to someone else who might be selling insurance, perhaps, and gives them that option to compare the two. And then you have to figure out how much insurance would it take to replace the value of this survivor's benefit. And it can be a lot more than most people expect. And in the end, the cost of the insurance, if you buy enough of it, really isn't going to be any less expensive than the cost of the survivor benefit. So I just think that some people worry about the fact that you're going to pay that premium all those years, and then your spouse might die on the same day as you, or they might only outlive you by 6 months, so they feel like it might be wasted. But I always say, well, what if they outlive you by 30 years? Then what do you do?
The idea of what it sounds like you're talking about, Tammy, is a tenet that I try to hold to when it comes to my own financial planning and my family's financial planning, and that is, don't make it a lot more complicated than it has to be. It sounds like there are a lot of people in this situation that are trying to think of every single possible contingency, and by doing so, just confuse themselves even more.
Or they're just thinking they're going to save a dime to spend a dollar.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just doesn't make sense. I really caution people about that and really, really understand the true value, even though it's expensive, but there is a true value to this election of a survivor benefit.
Is there any controversy or any techniques that I should keep in mind about trying to figure out who to leave it to, who to name as my beneficiary, other than just checking it every once in a while to make sure it's still the way I want it to be?
Yeah, well, there's two things. There's your beneficiary designations, which, you know, whether you're still employed or even if you've gone into retirement, you want to keep those up to date. And that can be for your life insurance benefits. It can be for your thrift savings plan, the money that's in your thrift account or other investments. And even with your retirement, there's a beneficiary designation. But when you file for retirement, you have to elect what kind of a retirement do you want. And that's where you're electing this survivor's annuity, which is a lifetime payment typically provided for a spouse. There is another option for an insurable interest, which can be somebody else who's financially depending on you, but typically it's a spousal benefit. And it's an expensive one, but it's generally well worth the cost, just like buying car insurance or health insurance, you know, something you don't want to get your money's worth out of, but you're glad you have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike Causey says all the time, you buy insurance and hope, those kinds of insurance at least, and hope you never, ever use them.
That's right. You don't really want to get your money's worth out of insurance, but that's why you have it.
Right.
You're pooling your money together with everybody else.
I want to shift gears for a moment. Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefits Director at the National Institute of Transition Planning. How's the webinar business? Do you have any webinars coming up?
Yes, funny you should ask. Yeah, we're just getting ready for a new series on insurance. In fact, it's with the health benefit open season starting up next month. We're getting ready to talk about, you know, even though there may not be a big pay raise this year, if you take a few minutes and really look at your insurance needs, you might find that you're in the wrong plan, or you maybe could pick up some additional tax benefits through selecting the right insurance. So we're going to help employees through the open season maze and really fine-tune the best plan and understand how Medicare works if you're of that age, and really talk about what's coming up new for federal employees next year when it comes to your insurance.
Are you surprised that so few employees actually change plans every year?
I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised. I think it's that paralysis by having too many choices. You know, anytime you're given somebody 30 different choices to choose from, you just throw up your hands and say, I'm just going to stay with what I know and what I have, because nobody has 8 hours to sit down and read every one of those brochures. But if you simplify it, it can become a lot easier to make that decision. And in many cases, it does make sense to make a change. As boring as that might sound, it's not as hard as it can be.
I'm trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head from Jason Miller's piece about the when the story came out that plans were going to go up an average of 3.something%. But
right.
I think he wrote that there are 257 different health plans that at least some federal employees can get in. And I think he said there are either 11 or 15, he reported, that everybody has access to.
That's right.
And that's really daunting, even if you just go with the 11 or 15 that everybody can get into. I don't remember which the number was. But, I mean, just trying to figure that out can be pretty daunting.
Exactly. But I think most employees can narrow it down to the top 3 to 5 that are really best for them. And then once you get to those 3 to 5, you study them and really think about, what are your needs? Are you filling a lot of prescriptions? Do you have a chronic illness? Are you 65 and eligible for Medicare? And when you think about those specific needs, it becomes a whole lot easier. And this year, it's kind of exciting. One of the plans is coming up with a specific Medicare supplemental plan for federal employees that's really going to be a saver for a lot of retirees who have Medicare. It's under the Aetna program.
One of the great things about open season every year is we get to see our friend Walt Francis a lot more.
I know.
He comes out of the woodwork.
Emailed. That's right. We've emailed back and forth, so we're starting to talk again. It's only that one time a year when he comes out of his basement.